You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome into a post-NBA draft edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil. We're recording this Thursday night after an eventful draft for the Miami Heat. At number 13, they took Kentucky guard Tyler Hero, and after acquiring a second-round pick earlier in the week, they traded three future firsts for the 32nd pick in the draft to take Stanford forward KZ Akpala. And then, at number 44, the pick they acquired earlier, they selected Bol Bol in what seemed like a really exciting project, but then traded him to Denver to recoup some future picks in cash. We'll talk about Akpala and Bol Bol later on, but let's start with the lottery pick, Tyler Hero, a safe pick at 13, but controversial, with Romeo Langford and Sekou Doumbouya still on the board. But the safe pick has sort of been Pat Riley's MO over the years, David.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the safety of it. I think... You know, there's some, you know, there's some issues with Hero. You broke him down in our Blue Notebook segment a few weeks back. He was a player that we didn't expect to be taken until the second half of the first round. He wasn't projected by a lot of people to be a lottery pick. In fact, I don't think I saw him as a lottery pick in any.
No, a lot of people liked him at like 21 to the Thunder or something like that.
Yeah, I think that was the general consensus. He provides some shooting, but not a knockdown shooter. You talked about his ability to score at all levels, a great free throw shooter, good mechanics, etc. So, I mean, the shooting component is there, but there's the physical tools that are an issue. I think the draft kind of shows not just Hero selection, but also Akpala and then eventually trading away the 44th pick, that Miami had a plan, one that wasn't evident to anybody. I thought that they would take either best player available. They did not. They would either take a player that might be an obvious fit, like a wing player that would provide some immediate scoring, either a Porter Jr. or a Langford. No, they did not. And if they were going to go for a long-term upside, a guy like Sekou Doumbouya, who went a couple picks later to Detroit at 15, seemed like an obvious fit. That wasn't the selection either. So they scouted guys. They liked who they did. And I guess they see a fit that's going to be a little hard to see right away. But as far as the safety of it is concerned,
Maybe safe was the wrong word, but highest floor. And I think highest floor is definitely what Riley has gone after. I mean, Bam Adebayo came out of nowhere, but you could argue with the guys that, look at the people that were taken after Bam. He had the highest floor. The only other guy after Bam taken that is really a standout name is John Collins from Atlanta. And I think a lot of Heat fans, you know, they made the connection to John Collins there at 14 that year. They passed on him. There were some issues with his defense. And look, these are still issues with his game at the NBA level. It wasn't any more than a rim runner. He started developing a little bit more of an outside shot, but I think Bam overall has a higher floor. You looked at the Justice Winslow pick. His floor was higher than Devin Booker. Nobody knew what to expect from Devin Booker. Devin Booker was the high upside guy. They passed on him. And so I do think that Riley's MO has been high floor guy, because even if you look at, and I agree with you, Romeo Langford, Sekou Doumbouya were better prospects with higher upside, but their floor was, like, you look at everybody taken after Tyler Hero, I don't think you could argue that anybody had as high as a floor as him, as far as, look, you know you're going to be able to, he's not an elite shooter, but he's a good shooter. Right. He's a good scorer. He's a dribble guy. He's a scoring guy. He's going to compete his butt off on defense. You know all of these things going in. You kind of know what you're going to expect from him. And maybe the Heat fall in love with that competitiveness, that grittiness, that work ethic that everybody talked about. And look, I read about it, and I, you know, when I did my Blue Notebook, like you referenced earlier, that's a big calling card for him, and you've got to think that Riley likes it. I'm not saying that it was the right pick. I'm not sure if I'm there yet. And you know what? I don't even think it matters. Like, who am I to say it's the right pick? We'll find out, right?
Right. Yeah.
But I think you're right. It showed that there is a plan here. And overall, I think, you know, maybe we should have expected this, knowing Riley's overall strategy has been to take high floor guys. I wonder if PJ Washington didn't get taken at 12, the pick before, if they would have taken PJ Washington over Tyler Hero. But I don't think so, because they ended up getting Akpala in the second round. I don't know.
Well, they could have done something differently with that. I mean, the fact that they traded up for a 32nd, was 32nd
pick?
I mean, that's... Yeah.
Well, that also, but they had their eye on Akpala because they could have taken Sekou Doumbouya at 13 and they just let him just go by, right? Yeah. They let him just fly right by. So, but I don't know. One thing we should mention here. They pass on Romeo Langford and they pass on Sekou Doumbouya. Langford goes 14, the very next pick to Boston. Doumbouya goes 15 to Detroit. So, and those are two teams obviously in the Eastern Conference with playoff hopes.
Right.
If they pan out and end up, if Boston ends up hitting on Langford as the Kyrie Irving replacement, and Tyler Hero is just meh, then Pat Riley is going to look bad.
Well, I think it goes to what you were saying as far as safe, not low floor kind of selection. You know, he's a guy who can become an immediate contributor. I think the statistical evidence shows that he's great in pick and roll situations. He's good in catch and shoot situations. And I think it goes to something we'll probably talk about later on in the next segment as far as him being able to play off Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow as a knockdown shooter. I think that's the expectation there. So they're looking to have somebody come in and be an immediate contributor. It just isn't, it's not a sexy pick. It's not the kind of pick that says, you know what, a couple years down the line, he'll be our go-to player. And that's, at least to me, and I think to you as well, and to a lot of our listeners, probably not that exciting. It's something a little disappointing even to think that they kind of passed on a player who might have a higher upside, choosing to select somebody who can just come in and contribute right away. And look, I mean, it's not a knock on Hero. I mean, from everything we've read about him, things you referenced before, like he's been through some things to get to this point. He's got a real swag and confidence to him, which certainly fits in at the NBA level. You know, he wants to prove himself. He's determined. He has the work ethic already. One of those guys that, you know, locks himself up in the gym after a bad game and starts taking shot after shot after shot. And that kind of work ethic, like a Josh Richardson, like a Justice Winslow, even like a Bam Adebayo, really appeals to the Heat front office. And I think it appeals to most front offices, but they'd rather, you know, take a swing on somebody with a little bit more talent and potential. And Miami chose to ignore that.
And you could argue that, you know, if they loved Romeo Langford, then they probably would have taken him. You know, if they really bought into his upside, there might have been a red flag there. There might have been a reason why they stayed away. I'm guessing that the reason was because Langford isn't a good shooter and doesn't necessarily project to be a great shooter. While Hero, maybe you believe in his shooting and you're like, okay, well, this is a premium right now in the NBA. We're going to go ahead and take the shooter. Mark writes in, Tyler Hero is an overcorrection to passing on Devin Booker a couple of years ago. Same school, same profile. Woof. What do you think about that?
No, I don't think they act that way, to be honest with you. That doesn't seem like Riley's MO to overcompensate like that. I mean, he's maybe you could look at 2014 and you know, trying to overpay for Chris Bosh and to overpay Tyler Johnson a couple years later, and maybe even to overpay guys like James Johnson and Deion Waiters in their respective free agency. But I don't know that he's looking at the draft and saying, you know what, this is an opportunity to make up for our inability to see the potential and Devin Booker. And I mean, look, Devin Booker, as good as he is, there's holes in his game. He's also getting a world of opportunity that he would never get on most teams because Phoenix is historically bad. And so he's going to be able to score and put up those kind of gaudy numbers without anything to reflect. I mean, to show for it. Like, they're still not winning. We've talked about this a number of times before. Devin Booker is kind of a lot of empty calories. Great to have, potentially. But, I mean, they're not winning, and they're not going to win anytime soon without another supporting cast there to complement his scoring.
And I don't think Riley looks at that, exactly what you're laying out, and he's like, boy, I wish I really had that over Justice Winslow or something like that. I think they're happy with what they have. With Justice, I still think that Justice could be the better player in the long run, or maybe the player that impacts winning more than Devin Booker does.
Right.
TZA Mac writes in, should have traded down if they really liked this kid, could have gotten some assets out of it. I think that's easy to say in retrospect, but you look at who was... there was a ton of trades in this draft, but there really weren't a lot of trades between basically 12 and 16, which is right where Miami was. Maybe the Heat were looking to trade down. We don't know that they weren't, but was anybody looking to trade up to 13 to leapfrog Boston or Detroit for Sekou Doumbouya or Romeo Langford? It doesn't look like that was the case because Boston didn't move that pick. Detroit didn't move their pick. Right. Maybe they tried to move down and they didn't get it. It's just I'm not arguing with the idea of it, but I don't know if maybe they did try to execute it. Well, I'm sure they don't know.
I'm sure they made their calls because that's just the way that this team works. But I mean, you look at the draft, the way it played out, and I think you had references maybe in a thread somewhere. I can't recall exactly where, but you talked about the depth of this draft. Like a lot of people were kind of knocking this because there was a lack of superstar talent, but a lot of good rotational type players. And I think there might not be much of a difference between the 13th overall pick and the 20th or the 30th overall pick. Guys that can come in and contribute. So it's about finding the right fit. And we saw a lot of trades for picks or inter picks, like within this draft, you know, the trading the 25th pick for the 30th or something along those lines. Not for what Miami needs, which is the movement of players. We didn't see, I don't recall seeing any kind of movement of actual players, well, with the exception of Phoenix trading away TJ Warren. But other than that, there really wasn't a whole lot of
Aaron Baines.
Aaron Baines, but that was mostly a cost-cutting move and kind of a dickish move by Danny Ainge, to be honest with you.
Oh, shocker. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about Hero's fit with the roster and what we can expect of him. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Casey Akpala is a high upside type of guy, unlike Hero. We'll talk about him later on. But as far as Tyler Hero, positionally, I think he fits well in the backcourt with Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, David.
Yeah, it seems like he's probably going to be slated as an expected starter. I mean, obviously he'll have to come in and prove himself. But if the expectation is that no other trades are going to take place over the offseason, and who knows, and free agency is obviously going to be somewhat limited, I think you can kind of project that he'll be a starter to complement Winslow and Richardson, playing the two-guard spot with Richardson staying at the three, somewhat out of position, and then Justice kind of, you know, taking over the point guard duties full-time.
Well, BJ writes in, what do you think this means for Jay Rich's future at shooting guard? And I saw a number of things on Twitter about, oh my gosh, like if Josh Richardson was supposed to be a two-guard and everybody admitted he was supposed to be a two-guard and Justice was supposed to be your point guard, why are you going out and drafting a shooting guard? Well, it's really not that simple. There's so many teams in this league that play three guards. Houston plays three guards with James Harden, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon. Portland, their best lineups were three guards when they threw Seth Curry in there next to Dame and CJ. There are a lot of good lineups that have three guards, and Miami's in an interesting position where Josh and Justice are able to switch so many things defensively. Now, Tyler Hero can't really. He's got decent size, 6'5", almost 6'6". Short arm type of guy, though. Not super athletic. I talked about in my scouting report how he's slow in every single direction. And so that's going to limit him somewhat. But you can hide him if it's a starting lineup or if there's a backcourt of Josh and Justice surrounding him. So I think defensively they could bracket him and help him. Offensively, his shooting will help space the floor for Justice and Josh. It does feel like now that we're sort of leaning into the point win the point Justice thing.
Yes.
Because Tyler Hero is not a point guard. He's an okay ball handler, a developing ball handler. He's shown flashes of pick and roll in a very small sample size at Kentucky. He mentioned after the draft, you know, that he thinks he can expand on his abilities, and we've seen this year after year after year after year with Kentucky guys. Kentucky does prepare their guys well for the NBA. All of them, almost all of them, perform well at the NBA level, but they also all show more than what they did at Kentucky, and so maybe you can expect a little bit of that ball handling stuff from Hero. If I were to guess, that would be my guess.
Yeah, Bam, but I still don't think, perfect example of
that. Exactly. I still don't think he'll be the lead ball handler. I think that goes to Justice. Hero and Josh will play off of Justice, and I think that works because now all of a sudden you've got two pretty good shooters next to Justice.
Yeah, and an additional ball handler too, somebody who can create plays for others. So, I mean, there's a versatility there, and I think then the kind of bigger question still is who starts at the power forward position, and that's either something that's going to have to be addressed via trade or in free agency somehow, because I feel like there's still defensive issues with Kelly starting at the four there. He's not.
Yeah, if you've got Hero and Olynyk, that's two I don't even know if I want to call Hero a minus defender, but he's just not a versatile one. I think you could put him on a guy his size and he'll survive. Like he plays really hard and he's going to make up for stuff by diving for loose balls. And
yes,
he makes, it's not quite Patrick Beverley levels, but he's got a little bit of that to his game, like where he just bothers dudes, you know? And yeah. I don't know if he's going to be a plus, like it's so hard to be a plus defender at that position, but I don't know how much of a minus is going to be.
And I think Miami, from their perspective, they're confident enough in their scheme and their ability to coach guys up that as long as the effort's there, that's a baseline that not most players have. And I think that's what they're looking for. They're looking for that kind of intensity, that edge, and a chip on his shoulder. Like I said before, he does have that kind of swag. There's a confidence there, whether it's, you know, just a public persona or not. He definitely does seem to carry himself with incredible confidence, you know.
Yeah. I don't think it's a persona. Everything that we're hearing right now, he's got that. He had that walking into Kentucky. And look, he kind of burst onto the scene there and outplayed a lot of guys who were higher recruits than him at Kentucky. That's hard to do.
It is.
That's really hard to do, and that shows confidence. And I think there's a little bit of alpha dog kind of swagger to him that is, quite frankly, missing on this roster right now. Justice doesn't really have that. He wants to have it, just like Josh wants to have it, but either you have it or you don't. And I don't know if Tyler Hero deserves it, but he has it, right? I mean, the dude showed up in a Miami Vice-colored floral print suit. I don't know if that means anything, but to me it means a lot.
You know, one of the things that we talked about as far as Hero in this context is that he was able to play with a guy like Keldon Johnson, who was more of a guy who contributes in small ways and doesn't look to dominate. He doesn't look to be the dominant scorer, which is probably why he slid a little bit in the drafts. That's what we had seen his name kind of rise up in mock drafts recently. So I feel like with Miami's temperament, where they lack that kind of alpha mentality or that superstar mentality, the go-to mentality as far as scoring, other than Deion, of course, he'll fit in there. Like,
that's
I could see him coming in there and honestly averaging 15 to 18 points per game just because everybody else is going to kind of defer, drive to the rim, kick out, and he'll have wide open shots. And so long as he's been able to continue knocking those down, and I expect that he will, and even in a higher level, I can't see why he couldn't be a really good scorer, you know, somebody who can be like one of the top five rookies as far as scoring is concerned.
I do think that there was a little bit of scuttle about, okay, you trade Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington. And that was sort of my first reaction, if I'm being honest. It was sort of, you trade Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington to save money and get below the luxury tax and sort of just dodge it. And then you end up just replacing them with Tyler Hero with the 13th pick in the lottery, where you maybe could have done that later on in the draft. I don't think that's the case. Tyler Hero is a better three-level scorer than Tyler Johnson will ever be. He's got a higher upside, however limited it is, than Tyler Johnson was. And also, he's not going to cost $19 million, so that means something. And then Wayne Ellington is a spot-up shooter or come off the, you know, dribble handoff type of shooter. Tyler Hero is not that. I mean, he could do that, but he could do more. He could score at multiple levels. He can get to the rim. He's got this nice little mid-range game that's developing, but he's got a couple of moves. I mentioned he's got like this little hop step fadeaway thing that he likes to go to every so often. That's nice, I guess.
Yeah, the defensive comparisons to Ellington are kind of scary, and that Ellington was somewhat limited as far as his defense. He could only guard one position, the two, and even that he didn't do particularly well.
Yeah, so I think Harrell guarded the one position better than Ellington. Like, saying Ellington could guard one position is kind of being nice.
An overstatement a little bit.
So for Goran Dragic and Deion Waiters, the other guards on this roster, I do think that one of them will be, they're in line to be the starter. I wouldn't rule out Hero being the starter, if not day one, early in the season. He'll have a chance to training camp in Summer League and so on to prove that. I do think that Dragic, you've talked about this a lot, the idea of him coming off the bench, maybe that becomes a possibility, especially given that there's not really a true point guard, a true leader of the offense in that second unit. So it probably makes more sense to have Dragic in that role. And then as far as Deion Waiters goes, it can be his job to lose as that guard between Justice and Josh, but Tyler Hero can go ahead and grab it too. It'll be a really interesting position battle if all of these guys are on the roster come opening day.
Yeah, I think if this roster remains fairly stable, I could see that starting lineup of Justice, Hero, and Richardson, and then kind of staggering Justice. You put Goran in there, kind of speed up the tempo a little bit. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a change of pace. Then you take out Josh, you bring in Deion, or you switch out Hero or something along those lines. You try to find some minutes for Derrick Jones Jr. too. He's on that roster. Potentially, if Okpala is on the roster and not sent to the G League, then you want to get him some opportunity as well. So. And you still have James Johnson to contend with. I mean, he could come back in phenomenal shape and be the kind of player we expect him to be. And if that's the case, then he could be the starter at the four spot. And if that works out, if we get the version of James Johnson that we saw a couple seasons ago and that we've seen in flashes here and there, he'd be a great complementary forward. Even if he's just able to knock down a three at a 35% rate and contribute his passing and ball handling and versatility on defense, that seems like a much better fit.
Pat Riley's done a good job of drafting over the years. Again, the last time he had two picks in one draft, it was 2015. He got Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, arguably the Miami's two best players today. He got those two guys in one draft. I will hold out judgment on the hero pick. I'll reemphasize that if Romeo Langford is a stud, it's going to look really bad no matter what, because I don't think Hero has that upside.
Well, great.
But I'll ultimately hold judgment. One thing is clear here, that earlier report in the offseason that the Heat are leaning towards building around Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, and Bam Adebayo. This pick reflects that. We just talked about it. Tyler Hero seamlessly sort of fits in and kind of with what they need and what those guys do well and what they don't do well. Hero fits in. And I think also their second-round pick, Casey Akpala, sort of reflects that as well. Let's take a break, but coming up, we'll talk about Akpala's upside and passing on the opportunity to draft Bol Bol. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. All right, the Casey Akpala thing, that got weird. The second round got weird for the Heat. We'll talk about the Bol Bol thing in a second. The Heat traded three future second-round picks to move up, or not really even to move up, because we to that 32nd pick to take Akpala. I think originally you'd assume that they took that 44th pick that they bought from the Hawks a couple days ago, that they took that and a couple of second-rounders in the future and use those to move up. But no, they kept the 44th pick. They traded three second. I think it's all the way out to 2025. I mean, somebody on Twitter, I wish I had saved it, but it was a good joke, basically said they traded Zaire Wade for Casey Akpala. I thought that was pretty good. But yeah, they move all the way up to Casey Akpala, who had a first-round grade, according to a lot of people. And after you take Akpala there, it makes a lot more sense why you, at 13, passed on Sekou Dembuya, because Casey Akpala is sort of a similar prospect. Long frame, raw kind of guy. I honestly don't know the difference between Sekou at 15 and Akpala at 32. Akpala could represent more value there.
Yeah, I think he has the kind of tangibles that you like out of a prospect with upside. As far as measuring potential there, he's got the wide frame, the long limbs. The potential there as a playmaker or ball handler, you know, he's tall, he's long, and you know, you could play him.
He's a good ball handler. He's a good ball handler already. He needs work as a shooter, but he's a long guy who can do stuff with the ball. That is something to build on. That's a good foundation.
So yeah, I don't mind the pick. I think, you know, one of the things that we'd seen a lot of from when Akpala and why he dropped, I think, as much as he had is. There were some measurables there, particularly defensively, where he was a negative defender. I think he had a negative turnover to assist ratio. All these things kind of, you know. And I think I saw some explanation there that a lot of that had to do with Stanford's lack of floor spacing. They did not have the kind of shooters that would enable a player of his versatility to kind of thrive in their system. Like, he's a two-year player also. He spent 2 years at Stanford, so... You know, players like that tend to get a knock. He's still fairly young, obviously, but I mean, I like the pick. And again, it shows that they must have really seen something in him that they thought it was worth making that kind of a move to jump up. I mean, they could have taken anybody with a 44th pick. They could have taken anybody with a 32nd pick who was still left on the board there, and they decided to pass on him. They could have even jumped a little bit higher, perhaps into the late first round. But, you know, who knows why they decided to make this decision. Again, they probably saw something, and you have to trust their scouting department that they believe in this player and were willing to make that move for a reason.
6'7", with a 7'2" frame, 210 pounds. He's going to have to add muscle for sure. I think that was another knock against him. But he's got the frame where he can put that muscle on. You mentioned that assist-to-turnover ratio. The numbers are he averaged 2 assists per game to 2.9 turnovers per game. A little James Johnson-ish there. Almost had 6 rebounds a game, shot 67% from the free throw line, almost 37% from three-point range on 3 3-point attempts per game, 87 total over the course of the season at Stanford. So there's some stuff out there that jumps out, and I think that there's reason for promise there. I really liked KZ Akpala going into this process. I almost did a blue notebook on him, but we saw him sliding down draft boards. This was a guy who I thought could go to the Heat at 13, and they end up getting him at 32. And when I thought he could go to 13, it was early in the process, and then he started sliding for some of these reasons that you're talking about. I think the Stanford fit is a good – that's a good point. I think that definitely mattered. I think you could basically draft anybody at the Pac-12 out of the Pac-12 at this point. It would be a better situation for them at the NBA level. But he's raw.
The Ringer has him as the 25th overall prospect.
It's good value.
That's good value. And the comps there are Brandon Ingram and Trevor Ariza. So
that's love those. Those are good comps.
They list him at 6'9", as far as his height is concerned. Maybe that's for shoes. 6'9", with a 7'2" wingspan.
Yeah, I'm seeing 6'9", too. Yeah, I must have found the without shoes.
Those are big shoes he's wearing.
It's a good situation for him too, because he's going to need some help defensively. The Heat's G League, their player development stuff. I know Juwan Howard's in Michigan, but Juwan Howard notwithstanding, they have a really good program for developing these kinds of guys. And it is going to be a good situation for him. I mean, I don't know if there was a better situation for him. They find guys just like this and make them good basketball players. I think he's going to be a rotation guy for the Heat within the next 2 or 3 years. I really like this pick. Let's go to Bol Bol. The Heat didn't move off of that 44th pick. They kept the 44th pick. They traded three future second rounders. Again, it sounds like it's being projected all the way out to 2025. They keep the 44th pick. Bol Bol is dropping. He's dropping. This is a guy who was in the green room, who was introduced on stage, who had expected to walk up at some point in the first round and shake hands with Adam Silver. And we get a tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski, which I think has been deleted since.
Yeah, I didn't see it. But you told me about it, and I was kind of disappointed to hear.
He tweeted that Bol Bol just left the green room in tears. And you just hate to see that regardless. I mean, and by the way, the whole ESPN broadcast was a cry fest. It was insane. Like, I feel great for these guys, but, you know, when it's
I tweeted it out. I thought some of those interviews were a little too invasive. Like, you mean, this is a moment these guys are like 19, 20, 21 in some cases, and they've been building up to this for over a decade, and they're here. And a lot of these cases, they've lost loved ones or had really, you know, impactful moments happening in their lives. And all of a sudden, the culmination of a dream happens, and they have like literally like a minute to process as all as they're walking on stage, taking pictures with Adam Silver, shaking his hands, and then walking off and having a microphone shoved in their face to ask him how they feel. It's like, well, how do you expect?
And to know how emotional it is, Zion Williamson knew he was going to be the first pick in the draft
for five years.
Like he knew for a long, maybe not 5 years, but since he knew he was going to New Orleans since the draft lottery happened. And he was still just struck by emotion immediately after it happened. You can't process that until it actually happens. And so, I thought the whole thing was weird. And then Bol Bol didn't even get to have that. He was crying before all of that. And as soon as Wojnarowski tweets that, he tweets just after that the Heat are selecting Bol Bol at 44. And I think Heat Twitter just lit up. Oh my gosh, we're saving him. I tweeted something about the culture will save him. Everybody was happy about the Heat. And then he tweets, and I think Shams is on this too, Heat are moving Bol Bol to Denver. Like, and so it was just like this roller coaster of emotions. Like, nobody wants Bol Bol. What was Bol Bol? The Heat are picking Bol Bol. The Heat are saving Bol Bol. And then the Heat are trading Bol Bol to Denver. Ultimately, I think Denver's a really good fit for him. It seems like the Nuggets are grabbing up all these like kind of buy low, could pan out really well. They got Michael Porter last year, Bol Bol this time. And the Heat now recoup a future second round pick and some of that cash that they used, I guess, ostensibly to pay for that pick in the first place. So there we go. That's where we're at. No Bol Bol, but the Heat have Tyler Herro and KZ Akpala.
Yeah, look, I'm disappointed for Bol Bol on a personal level. I think both you and I had talked about his impact there, and we broke him down in a Blue Notebook session as well. And, you know, there were concerns there. I didn't want Miami to select him at 13, even though he was projected to be a potential top 10 pick because of injury concerns, because of concerns regarding his work ethic, the kind of weight that he's dropped, and the fact we're hearing even later on that maybe he didn't interview well with teams, and those are all red flags. So, I mean, he was definitely a guy with some potential as a scorer, given his height and everything else, but while the talent might be there, all of those and other intangibles were not, and they didn't show there, and, as well as major concerns about his injuries. And the potential for future injuries as well. So I think those are all significant red flags. I understand Miami's and Miami fans' fascination with getting a long-term prospect that showed incredible offensive flash. And he was a different type player in that, because of his height, because of his range of skills, because he could shoot from the perimeter, etc. But those kinds of players, I mean, you get very few of them that will pan out if they've already incurred injuries at his age. There was a limited amount of tape on him because, yeah, you know, he hadn't played much at Oregon. And so I'm not surprised that he dropped. I didn't think he would drop all the way to the second round like that. But as far as Miami selecting and then trading, you know, it was an opportunity for them, I think, like you said, to recoup some of the lost picks and cash. And
smart.
I'm glad they gave him an opportunity because, you know, he needs it. And Denver, like you said, is also, I think, a very good opportunity. They're not counting on him to contribute right away. He's probably going to sit out the year. He won't play like Michael Porter Jr. didn't play last year. And that's already an established playoff team with an established all-NBA center in Nikola Jokic. So I don't think there's any kind of rush to get him onto the court. He can take his time. He can heal. He can put on weight. And they've got a pretty good medical staff from everything we've heard.
So the draft is over. The Heat take Tyler Hero, guard out of Kentucky. They get KZ Akpala, the forward out of Stanford. They address two team needs in regards to a guard and a power forward. And specifically the type of guy, the type of guard and the type of power forward that they needed. And when you and I have been talking so much about what Miami's best fits are, what they need, I said to Tyler Hero in our Blue Notebook, I said he would be a great fit for the Heat. I just wasn't in on him at 13. So we'll see. It'll be Tyler Hero or Romeo Langford. That's going to be the two. That's going to be the guy that we compare to Hero in the next decade or whatever. But ultimately, I think he fits. KZ Akpala, a nice little bit power forward project kind of guy, raw. But definitely the upside pick out of the two is KZ Akpala. It would not be unheard of if Akpala ends up being the better player than Tyler Hero. He's got higher upside than Tyler Hero. I would not be shocked, to be honest. But we'll see how it goes. But now we know, and the Heat will have the rest of the offseason. Maybe they make some other moves. Deion Waiters, Hassan Whiteside, that's still out there. But the Heat, I think, added two good players, ultimately. And that's something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll probably monitor the market over the next couple of days. I'm sure Miami will look at some undrafted free agents and bring them in as additional bodies and guys they could potentially develop in the G League, you know, because they were able to get a guy like Tyler Johnson and turn him into a $50 million player. And I think they'll continue to look at that as an avenue for growth and internal development.
That's it for today. You can connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, man.